Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
To feel like busting up a Starbucks. Busting up a Starbucks.
One of our guests sings about busting up a Starbucks. The other could well write a caffeinated jingle for the company. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And coming up, composer Joel Beckerman makes those ultra-short but ultra-memorable jingles for TV commercials. He'll tell us about his latest project, crafting theme music for the Super Bowl. We'll start, however, with this singer-songwriter, Mike Doty. He started out with the New York-based alternative rock band Soul Coughing, which earned cult status and critical acclaim from three studio albums released in the 90s. Doty launched a solo career in 2000, but Soul Coughing still has a devoted following, and if you're one of those fans, brace yourself for Mike Doty's new memoir called The Book of Drugs. In it, he writes very frankly about a long struggle with addiction and about how he feels about his old band. Mike Doty joins me here in the studio. He's got guitar in hand. Welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
So, J-A-D-N, just another drug narrative.
J-A-D-N, Jaden, just another drug narrative.
Your joke with friends.
Yep.
We've seen an awful lot of this.
Yeah. Lately. Well, now it's basically like there are just a few archetypal stories. You got your boy meets girl, you got your rags to riches. This is like a new one, like a mid-20th century edition to the short roll call of stories is the addiction narrative. Yeah.
So, you know, Caroline Knapp's drinking a love story.
Drinking a love story, yeah, which is says everything just in the title.
Right.
You don't even need to write any more books. Just the title is like told the whole story.
So we have a kind of dual tale that unfolds here, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, you say very early on in the book and come back to it sort of towards the end, I love drugs.
I love drugs. I loved them. I wouldn't be where I am now without them. I'm not recommending them because you are kind of more likely to die or just have this utterly humiliated, mediocre existence. And I got to say, like, all the stuff that I needed to do drugs for then, and I remember telling somebody, like, oh, you know, I only need drugs to have sex and make music. And a tiny voice in my head was like, those are the best things.
Hmm.
Like, those are the best things in the world. Something is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now it's all, like, actually, in fact, better than the drug days, which I'm astounded to tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going through the story, both your personal story, the struggle with addiction, and your struggle with your band through the course of the book, the thing that strikes me is how the joy is sucked out of both of those things that talking about, making music, having sex.
Absolutely.
When you're on the drugs.
You got it.
How much of that is, in retrospect, you now, you know, remembering those times, and how much would you actually have felt that in the moment?
Well, I mean, you wouldn't be able to... I was enmeshed in the really abusive marriage that was Soul Coughing. And I think, like, if I had gotten out of that, I would have found another abusive marriage. Mm-hmm. I'm just, like, come from a messed up house, a messed up family. And, like, if you're that guy and you're an addict, you're just going to find those relationships.
Mm-hmm. The idea of Soul Coughing, a band that many people still love, as an abusive relationship, will this be a revelation to real Soul Coughing fans? Has this been sort of out there?
Ones that have followed my solo career have noted my extreme distaste to which I respond to, like, Soul Coughing requests. So they have an inkling, but I really think, I'm getting a lot of tweets of shock and amazement that this was how it went down. You know?
All right, so you started as you were a doorman at the Knitting Factory.
Correct.
This would have been, I guess, when the Knitting Factory was on
92,
Leonard
Houston Street. Houston Street.
Oh, first one.
Way back.
It then moved to Leonard Street. Now it's out in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
But important club on the alternative music scene.
Indeed.
You're working the door. That's your entry. You meet these other musicians, you're writing songs, but you're also a good deal younger than the rest of the guys.
10 years younger than the rest of those guys.
Which, when you're 22, that's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And initially, they were just like, whatever, this guy's the doorman, and just sort of showed up. I don't even know why they showed up for those gigs. They certainly did not seem to care at the time. And then suddenly, like, record companies showed up. And, you know, I wanted to be, I was very sort of generous. I wanted everybody to, like, have a stake in it. But basically, everybody wanted an equal stake with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, said some stuff that I find pretty abusive to get me in a place where I was, you know, where I was, like, beat up enough to be like, oh, you're right. I'm not really very meaningful in this band. It's all about you guys. And, yeah, it was just, it was super messed up, you mm-hmm. know?
And just to say, you know, when you say, I was very generous, I mean, reading your own description of yourself, your behavior,
right.
You do not come across as someone who's looking back at his life through rose-tinted glasses.
No, definitely not. No, I mean, like, there's so many kind of terrible stories in there that I really, you know, like, the mission had to be to show myself as an extremely dark being as I was. But also, I just think, as an artist, I would err on the side of the better story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the story of, like, the paladin who is beset by
right,
you know,
right.
all this stuff is just not that fun.
And not really the case, I guess.
Indeed, definitely not the case. Definitely not.
Mike Doty is with us. He founded the band Soul Coughing. His memoir is out now. It's called The Book of Drugs. You say these days that maybe there's a handful of songs from the old band that you still like?
There's, like, I like Idiot King's song called $300 I like, Soundtrack to Mary I like. But most of it is just really, like, just a whole, you know, big fat cup of hot disappointment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, you know, it was this kind of cute, weird cult band that, like, we had the muscle to take on the Beastie Boys. We really had it. And, you know, it seemed like my bandmates were so spiteful towards this kid that was so much younger than them, that they disliked so much, that they just they sunk their own boat. It was really crazy.
Well, as you say, it wasn't long before the record companies came sniffing, and the album Irresistible Bliss in 96 yielded this minor hit called Super Bon Bon. Super Bon Bon from the band Soul Coughing. Mike Doty founded the group back in the early 90s, 92. They broke up in 2000. Mike now off on a solo career. His latest album is a two-disc live set called The Question Jar Show, which we'll talk about in a minute. But his memoir is out now called The Book of Drugs, detailing his battle with addiction and, indeed, with his band Soul Coughing.
Yeah. Big time.
I mean, memoirs, you know, are useful to not only sort of place you in a context, mm-hmm. but to give people an idea of what a scene was like back then.
Yeah, I mean, do I do that? Is it really, like, I feel apart from almost everything that happened in the 90s.
Well,
so
this is where I'm going with this. Your memoir, while it does name some names,
mm-hmm.
does not name lots of others, including the other three guys in the band.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the sample player, the yeah. bass player, the mm-hmm. drummer.
Well, I didn't, you know, not everybody's going to Google it. And I don't, you know, first of all, I've talked to other people about, you know, that I've, like, sat down friends and said, you know, this book's coming out. And, you know, they've been like, oh, well, of course you included this traumatic story and I don't remember it. And I say, no, but I included this traumatic story and they don't remember it.
Mm.
So perspective is insane. So, like, for me to just throw mud on the names of my ex-bandmates who are not going to write a book, kind of not right. I mean, a lot of people are going to Google it, but mm-hmm. I think most people are just going to see them as figures in a story.
Now, have you gotten any reaction from some of the unnamed people who sort of are either in the mainstream or on the margins of the story?
Well, there's a long list, sort of a menu in the middle of the book, of like really terrible sexual encounters, mm-hmm. like really sad, pathetic sexual encounters. And some of them have showed up. One of them found the book, bought a galley like on eBay or something, and was just like, wow, that, yeah, you really didn't enjoy that, did you? It was, yeah, it's weird. It's right. gonna be a lot of this.
Well, and you sort of make the point, page one of the book, that, you know, it's a memoir, mm-hmm. and as you say, there are some things you don't remember, there right. are some things you right. can't fact check because the other person or people don't remember.
Exactly.
So this is the gospel according to Mike Doty. But one of the things that strikes me is how momentous decisions in your life seem to just kind of happen. You know, you have yeah. a hangover when you're 14 or 15. You say, I'm not going to do that anymore. And for many years, you don't drink. I mean, you start smoking weed and doing right, all the rest right,
right.
of it.
Yeah, alcohol was like my family's thing, and I felt like I had cheated the disease by just, you know, being into weed, cocaine, ecstasy, heroin, and LSD.
Right.
You know, as
right.
long as I wasn't drinking beer, I was good.
So, but then the decisions to A, clean up,
mm-hmm.
and B, break up Soul Coughing, uh-huh. and set out to what you were originally, which was a solo artist. Both of those just seem to happen. I mean, they're so inevitable when they
right.
happen. But it doesn't seem like there's like that dramatic, you know, you wake up in a ditch and, you know.
No, but I mean, you know, both of those things happened after years of misery, and they were just so ready to happen
mm-hmm.
that the sort of tiny opportunities. I mean, the band basically broke up because a manager called who just thought we were insane and didn't want to work with us anymore. And I was like a deep, you know, horrible, junky, gray character. And
you write that you didn't know he was calling you
exactly.
to basically fire you.
So basically I was like, I hate this band. I don't want to be in this band. And he was like, okay, well, you should break it up. Like, now's the time to break it up. And he got out of being able to tell, like, the man at death's door that he was getting fired.
Right.
But, yeah, that was what that was the godsend.
And then the decision to, you know, you have this friend, Molly. Who...
Yeah, I had a friend that kept showing up. I dated her in the early 90s, and she'd been clean for a bunch of years. She was like a teenage dope fiend in the legendary days of the Lower East Side. And she was, she liked me because I wasn't drinking liquor, as I said. But then we were at a party, and she tasted Coke in my mouth when she kissed me. And she's like, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Right.
So she dumped me.
But she never cut you off.
For years, she would show up, and she'd be like, hey, what's going on? And she would always have something amazing happening. Like, I really got into reading mystery books. So I wrote all these writers, and I'm friends with all these great mystery writers. And I'm writing about horseback riding and racing, and I'm learning the piano. And I was so resentful because I just felt she had no right to be having fun because she wasn't on drugs. Whereas I was on drugs.
You were the rock star.
I was a rock star, and I was basically in a Holiday Inn getting high by myself,
yeah.
you know.
And so eventually she's the one you call.
Eventually I realized why she had been keeping the line open all these years, because I just called and I was like, please take me to one of those meetings, because it just is not working.
And thus begins the second journey of Mike Doty, the solo career that he's embarked on for over a decade now. His latest album is a live 2-CD set called The Question Jar Show. But you're going to play something for us. This is from the last studio record.
This is from Yes,
yes and
also,
also
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Here's Mike Doty, guitar in hand, with a song called Na Na Nothing.
Well, your man won't dance, but I will. He's just a cup of punch that you'll spill. You're gonna hang him from the sails of a sinking sloop, crowded with the goons and the dopes you do. You get nah, nah, nothing. I found out that I'm a chump and you were cold, cold-hearted to me. You got la, la, lucky that I
I told you what I did, and you're so, so sorry, but not the way you want your kid. Nah, 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 nothing from me. Nah, nah, nothing from me. I was in flux, I was a clunker, I was busted cruff. I was the swellest of the swells and the roughest rough. But now I'm bound to the bend of your bone white wrist. Shun the pill popper, love the pharmacist. You get nah, nah, nothing. I found out that I'm a chump and you a cold, cold hearted to me. You got la, la, lucky that I told you what I did, and you're so, so sorry, but not the way you want your kid. Nah, 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 nothing from me. Nah, nah, nothing from me. Nah, nah, nothing. I found out that I'm a chump and you were cold, cold hearted to me. You got la, la, lucky that I told you what I did, and you're so, so sorry, but not the way you want your kid. Nah, 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 nothing. You get nah, nah, nothing. I found out that I'm a chump and you were cold, cold hearted to me. You got la, la, lucky that I told you what I did, and you're so, so sorry, but not the way you want your kid. Nah, 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 nothing. Nah, 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 nothing from me. Nah, nah, nothing from me. Nah, nah, nothing from me.
Mike Doty, live on Soundcheck. Nah, nah, nothing, originally from his 2011 record called Yes and Also Yes. And in a moment, we continue our conversation with Mike Doty, talking about his memoir, The Book of Drugs, and we'll have some more live music as well. And later, it's going to be tough to beat the Giants this Sunday in the Super Bowl, I hope. We'll talk with composer Joel Beckerman about an even tougher job, updating the Super Bowl theme song. That's coming up later on Soundcheck.
See Carson ain't this time around. Why not see Carson ain't these threes and four sums amount? Why not see Carson? Walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now with Mike Doty. During the 90s, he performed under the stage name M. Doty with this popular alternative rock band, Soul Coughing. In the background, you're hearing the song Circles from the album El Oso, released in 1998. And now out is Mike Doty's memoir called The Book of Drugs and a two-disc live record called The Question Jar Show. Mike is doing a reading and a performance tonight here in New York at the Barnes & Noble in Tribeca at 6 o'clock. He's here with us on Soundcheck today. Most of your story, Mike, most of the book, takes place in New York in the 90s.
Indeed it does,
What was the scene like then, and how is it different now?
Well, at the beginning of the 90s, I just happened to show up in the explosion of hip-hop, and no idea about any of this stuff, the vaguest inkling. And I was a rock
kid. Because you had grown up upstate, basically.
Yeah, you know, I was like a replacements Billy Bragg fan, you know, and I showed up and this stuff was amazing, and it was atonal and huge and rhythmically strange, and there was just... It was incredible. And then, you know, my friends are like, oh, we're going to see Dinosaur Jr. I was like, well, what are you talking about? No diss on Jay Maskey.
Yeah. the guitarist behind Dinosaur Jr.
But that happened, and then I was at the Knitting Factory. Again, stumbled into this amazing world of avant-garde music, John Zorn and Mark Rebo and Yamatsuka Ai and all these great people. And sort of the dissonant things kind of, like, I saw the parallel between the hip-hop and the experimental music. But to me, the rest of the 90s was just the dullest possible, you know, gray people pretending they didn't like playing music. And, you know, people, like, I remember Kurt Cobain criticizing Eddie Vedder for wanting to be a professional musician. Mm. Like, the, like, paying the rent and eating food was not supposed to be part of the deal. Like, when you picked up a guitar, that had to not be your goal.
Well, now, did you fall into that?
Well, I mean, I became very cynical as the years went by because, you know, because I hated being in my band. And I just, you know, my dream had turned into, like, the king of all lousy jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some point I was just like, fine, I'll get high when I wake up in the morning because somebody will just push me out on stage and that's it. But, I mean, early on, like, I just remember, you know, every band from New York that got a record deal had to, like, sneakily put out a 7-inch with some indie label, or else they felt like, you know, they were, you know, going to be decried as
right.
sellouts. But I was like, dude, come on now.
Well, you started as, you know, a songwriter.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's taken you a long time to get back to that.
Indeed.
You know? But after the detour through Soul Coughing, which again many of your longtime fans will still maintain that was a great detour.
Yeah, that's fine.
Whatever
I mean,
it meant to you.
Yeah.
But here you are. You know, you travel around. You travel light. You and the guitar.
That's right.
You want to do another song for
sure.
us?
Sure. The song's called Day by Day by. The future is old news, some ruse, the choice you choose. Decked out like a financier, feckless like the fox you fear. Yeah, for the trophy cup, the university of prom queen runners-up. Drowsing the immeasurable, pleather and wool, it's ahead of your pull. No chance, lose your trance, napping like the sycophants. Day by day, by day, by day, by day. Day by day, day by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day. I never laughed when I saw you dance. I never giggled at your elegance. Retrace your paces, porous faces come up aces. This, and you're ready to kiss that, like an acrobat. Adventures unmentionable, free and consensual. Day by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day. Day by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day. Well, I swab, fix the job, I feel, mix the deal thereof. Men to shove, let's stay. Soup of the day, it's time. Love Karim, it's real. Burn the wheel, it's done. So's the fun, be free. Tread on me. Day by day, by day, by day, by day, by day, by day.
Mike Doty, live on Soundcheck with Day by Day By, again, originally from last year's record, Yes and Also Yes, live performance here in the studio with us today. The memoir is out now called The Book of Drugs. Mike, you were saying before there's still a handful of Soul Coughing songs that you look back on with some affection.
Indeed.
Jaime from Tribeca writes, $300 is one of my favorite Soul Coughing songs. I wonder why it's one of his. What do you, as a songwriter, hear in that old song?
I tell you what happened, which was a rare occurrence, is I wrote the song to a loop, to like a something I did on a sampler, just like a really basic kind of jungle drum and bass beat, you know, like, and I got into the studio, and our drummer would do this very weird thing where he wouldn't want to play a beat. He would find a beat like not original enough. And so you'd ask him to play something, and he'd be like, yeah, I just played it. No, that wasn't it. It's the same beat. Like really like psychotic time. And when I taught him this song, and he was playing weirdly, I think I visibly crumpled. Like, it just couldn't handle it. And so I guess I guilt-tripped him into playing the beat that I wanted. Mm. So it actually one of those few songs that actually turned out to be what I wanted it to be.
Now, has the songwriting process, it's just you and the acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Well, it's always been,
and
really.
You're sober.
Yeah.
So
totally.
How different is the process now?
It's awesome. I mean, for real. You know, drugs don't really, their reputation for being artistically useful is kind of overstated. They're useful in the sense, I have a lot of low self-esteem, a lot of self-hatred. And as a kid, I needed to shut that off to write a song. So that's how it served me. And, you know, thank God it did. Otherwise, I wouldn't have ever been able to do this. But once you actually get that stuff out of the way, and you learn how to actually do what you want to do, I mean, I feel like I'm a real artist now. And, mm-hmm. like, what I'm doing is really, you know, I listen to the records. I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted to do. That's what I meant. Everything
well,
is
not all the
and...
time. I mean, there's a moment on the new record where you clearly have gone off the rails.
Right. Well, what do I say?
Well, it's a record. Edit the thing, you know? Listen to this. This is from the new album. This is Mike Doty doing Luminous Girl.
Shining with the lights going strong. Shining with the lights going strong. Saw you in the moonlight.
No. That's not where I saw you.
Saw you in the morning sunshine. And you sang Star Love in the Night. That's right. Fighting back the tears that came on. Squinting in the yellow
Mike
light.
Doty from...
See, I like that. I like that kind of stuff.
I like it too, but, you know, most people...
I will defend it artistically.
Most people would have fixed that in the mix.
No. Less fun.
From the two-disc live album, The Question Jar Show, Mike Doty, that album's out now as well. Once again, Mike's doing a reading and a performance tonight here in New York at the Barnes & Noble Tribeca at 6 o'clock. He's with us on soundcheck. The band Dead Kennedys had a great old song called Holiday in Cambodia. One of the darkest, and I have to say, darkly comic parts of the book is you on holiday
in Cambodia. Before which I spent one night in Bangkok, by the by.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. With
one
the
night.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Who was that? Was Murray Head, wasn't it? Did one
Chess,
night in
the musical Chess.
Yeah, which was Murray Head and those guys. Lots of... Did you go because of the song? Did you say, I got to have a holiday?
No, I went because I had been everywhere just playing music and I wanted to go somewhere that I wouldn't tour. And of course, the first time I went, I was wasted and all this weird stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, once I got sober, like, you know, my friend Molly, who had, like, my quote-unquote Molly, who had brought me in, I was like, I'm going to do stuff. I went to Ethiopia. I went to Eritrea. I went back to Cambodia. I went to Argentina. I learned how to speak German. Like, I'm just doing stuff.
Mm. Now, I only have time for one more question, so I'm going to take something you didn't write in the book, and that is the band The Long Winters. You quote from their song New Girl at the top of the story, twice you burned your life's work, once to start a new life and once just to start a fire.
That's right.
What is this book? Is this you starting a fire?
Yeah, this is the second time. Yep. I wanted that quote. I was like, why do I want that quote? I don't do it twice. Then I realized that this book is me starting a fire, you know?
You already saved your life by getting clean.
Exactly, yep.
So this is Mike Doty starting a brush fire in the music world with his memoir called The Book of Drugs. The book is out now along with this this 2-CD live album, The Question Jar Show, which is both music and banter with the audience,
and
which
banter.
Is a lot of fun. Mike, great fun to have you with us on Soundcheck
absolutely.
Today. Thanks so much.
Rock.
I'm alone. She had that skin so fine, red lips rose like now. Her mouth was wide, sweet as well. But now and then there's hours of dreaming of her spell.
Still to come this weekend, close listeners will hear the sound of the Super Bowl getting an update. We'll hear about the game's new sonic brand next on Soundcheck.
Lonely, and the only way to beat it is to bat it down. And the only way to beat it is to bat it down. And the only way to beat it is to bat it down.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and if this music is doing its job right, it should bring one thing to mind: football. John Williams wrote this theme music, called Wide Receiver, for NBC's Sunday Night Football back in 2006, and since then the network has branded its pigskin programming with this epic score. But every brand occasionally needs an update, especially when the Super Bowl comes around. And that's where Joel Beckerman comes in. He's a composer and the owner of Man-Made Music, a sonic branding consulting company. Joel, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me, John.
Sonic branding, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, I don't have a book about drugs, so I don't even know why you have me on the show. You sure you want me here? Boy, he was just entertaining.
Mike Doty, tough act to follow.
Fantastic
talk. Yeah.
So
sonic branding,
yeah,
what is it?
Well, sonic branding, really, the way we look at it is it's sort of this intersection between art and business in a lot of ways. What it is really is about the strategic use of music and sound, which everyone obviously knows has emotional impact, to help build a brand or tell stories. You know, really the way I look at it is I'm a storyteller. I just happen to do it with music.
Okay. The story you're going to be telling is one of the Super Bowl. But before we get to the Super Bowl, this idea of branding, of making us subconsciously associate a short hit of music with a company or an item or something, that's basically what you're trying to kind of play with our synapses, right? Make those connections for us.
Well, I don't know how sinister it is, but I think that really what it comes down to at the end of the day, I sort of wish we could take the word brand out, because it really is about stories. And it's about trying to, I mean, you can't make people do anything, really, I think. I think what you can do is you can entice them, you can draw them in. And if you speak a language, the language of music, that has that emotional impact and it's something they're interested in, they'll listen. That's really
but,
what
you
it
know,
is.
People like Brian Eno, you know, who's done music of every conceivable stripe and did that Windows logon thing, said that, you know, it took him more agita and hours to create that 3 seconds of music than some big expansive thing. You know, when you have to whittle an idea down so that it hits literally like that, that's got to be really tough.
It is really tough. To be honest, it takes time. And really, a lot of times what we've learned is you can't go for the short piece. You have to start with a big idea. You have to talk about something, you know, talk about something like, for instance, the work we've done with AT&T, which is about, you know, which is a very large brand that does many different things for many different people. And, well, what's the story of that brand? And how do we – okay, so once we can tell the entirety of the story of that brand – and it does have a great story to it, how can we then cull it down to just those few notes?
All right. Let's hear the new full-length anthem for AT&T that Joel Beckerman has composed. You might have already heard it in some commercials. It starts with a 4-note logo. Right, that's the AT&T anthem that Joel Beckerman composed, obviously, for AT&T. So now, Joel, that's the big idea. That's the epic. It's the anthem.
Yes.
So now how do you condense that to something that's going to be really short, sharp, and catch our attention.
Well, I have to give credit to my collaborators on this because it really, a lot of what we do is a team effort. And Aaron Kotler, Dan Venn, Ben Ahrens were people who worked with me on this. So how we culled it down is, well, you know, a lot of it is, well, what are the most important notes? And that is a really tough question because really what it comes down to is, you know, we have this whole long form brand and you only played a bit of that anthem and it does go on and it gets much bigger and other kinds of things happen. But what are the most important notes so that if you hear that a bunch of times, you hear the long form brand expression, then how do you cull it down so that it reminds you of that long form experience?
Mm-hmm.
But in a very, very short period of time. And that's really the essence of the Sonic logos is there are so many different places in media where you only have a couple of seconds. There's a lot of other things that need to get accomplished in that communication, and that time is expensive.
So if you have a few seconds to create a ringtone, for example, and you want that ringtone to remind people, oh, that's right, my phone's an AT&T, you're going to distill the essence of what we just heard and get to this. So that's the ringtone that will be coming out on the next generation of AT&T phones.
Right. There are actually three that will be in the next. That's one of the three that's coming out. And then there are 26 others behind it because one of the things we're trying to do is to show the range of expression, personal expression that people have in their phones. It's their personal device.
And that'll be the default.
That's the one that you hear right out of the box.
So the equivalent of the iPhone marimba or whatever.
Exactly.
So this is what will be interrupting Philharmonic concerts in the future.
I certainly hope not. Put it on vibrate, folks.
All right, now let's talk Super Bowl. John Williams did this original Sunday night football theme for NBC. It's NBC's turn to host the Super Bowl, so they want to use that. They want that brand continuity, but it's also 2012, so they want something new. So now what is your brief here in this?
It really was about again, you know, it's a little awe-inspiring to have an assignment like this. You know, here I am following a modern master, really truly one of the great, you know, living composers that we have, and how do I keep the germ and the essence of what he's done thematically and bring that forward to fit the brief. And like you said, what the brief was, what the story is, how it's different this year than it was 4 years ago or prior to that, is when you think about it, and you know, someone was teasing it earlier, you know, this is an epic matchup between, you know, the Giants and there is another team, and I forget who that other team is, but there is another team, I think, in. But no, but really, all seriousness,
same
is,
team the Giants beat 4 years ago, and we're hoping around these parts anyway for a similar outcome.
Well, we're turning into sports radio here for a moment.
But yeah.
No, but I think the idea of this really is to tell that story. So the story is this epic. It's a grudge match. It's an epic matchup. So how do I create something that is epic, that really is that's true to the original idea, the original Williams idea? And then, you know, again, we have to multiplex that out. We have to come up with all the different kinds of things. Imagine different moments in the game when there's different levels of tension or different levels of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about sort of imagining what they're going to need for the game in advance of the game so that they have an entire palette of music to choose from.
So whatever happens on the field, there's a musical cue at their disposal that they can just, on the spur of the moment, put on the air.
Exactly.
Now, you did this back in 2009. You updated the John Williams football theme, which he called Wide Receiver. Joel's update of that was called End Zone. This was used for the 2009 Super Bowl when the Steelers beat the Cardinals. We'll be right back. So that is the updated Super Bowl theme from 2009 by my guest Joel Beckerman, the composer and owner of Man Made Music, Sonic Brand and Company here in New York. He's also charged with doing this year's update for the Super Bowl, which I'm told you cannot divulge to us.
Well, I think they'd like to leave a few surprises for the game, as you might imagine. Just to point out, those for football fans who recognize that music you just played, also that was written for the Super Bowl but became the music for the regular season after interspersed with the Williams orchestration.
Right. Now, we heard the John Williams original at the top of the segment. You added, it sounds like, another layer of drums, some electric guitars. And
new thematic elements in the middle, sort of diverging from the Williams theme and then coming back to it in little quotes here and there. And we think about it, really, all we have to play with if we're trying to really treat a thematic idea that's so important and so really a legendary thematic is, you know, we have things like color, like you pointed out. We have things like additional thematic elements, and we have things like harmony. How can we change the harmony to, wow, now I've recognized this, but now with the harmony, it sounds just a little different.
It's right. So, again, this year, for Sunday's Super Bowl, what will be different? What can you tell us?
Well, just to go back to you had asked about the brief on it, it really is about this epic matchup. Mm-hmm. So one thing is to take what already is a very big-sounding theme, much more of a fanfare, and the idea was to make it that much grander, that much bigger, really much more of an epic flavor. And then in addition to that, you know, the original this music was written, or the music for 2009 is several years old and still works very well for the show, for the broadcast. But they were asking for, well, where else can you bring it? What else can you do with it? So we borrowed some modern musical styles and some things that are, you know, might be a little surprising to people.
The rumor is that you've given it a little bit of a dubstep flavor.
There's one track that actually does have a dubstep flavor, and it's how we
explain that for
sure.
Folks.
Well, dubstep is a very I think really coming to the mainstream now a lot, but it's a very distinct electronic style made popular by a number of different artists, Skrillex, Malleus, Darren Cord, a number of, you know, it's really sort of born in the UK. Mm-hmm. And really the fun of this was to sort of mash up ideas from that with the orchestral ideas, but still stay true to the Williams original thematic. That was a challenge.
So you've been listening to a lot of Skrillex in the studio while doing this.
A little bit. I was listening to it before that as well. But.
All right. Well, this just to give you an idea of, you've heard the Williams. Here's a little bit of Skrillex and Scary Monsters and Nice Sprites. All right, so we'll be waiting anxiously to hear how the sounds of dubstep, like this music from Skrillex, blends with the John Williams original theme for Sunday Night Football on the Super Bowl this Sunday. Joel Beckerman's the guy who's going to make it happen. Skrillex, by the way, is here in New York. He's doing a sold-out show at the Roseland Ballroom tonight and Terminal 5 tomorrow. So dubstep, that big bass thing, that's sort of the distinctive element of dubstep. Mm. We might hear a little bit of that at some point.
You might very well. I mean, I think that rather than saying it's a blend, I would say it's definitely a collision. But I think hopefully a very respectful collision.
Okay.
And I think it does work. So, but we'll leave it for audiences.
All right. Now, there is, you know, definitely this is an orchestral, originally an orchestral piece, big, anthemic. Who did you get to play in your recording?
Well, of course, if we're being if we're being respectful of the work, which we need to be when it comes to Williams, we just wanted to find the absolute best players. We did essentially what amounts to a pickup orchestra here in New York, but it was quite a number of people from, including section leaders from the New York Philharmonic. It's an epic work. It's a fantastic work. It's also a very challenging work to play. So it was really incumbent upon us to find the best people.
And how many different versions now will the Super Bowl producers have at their disposal for Sunday's game?
Well, quite a number. You know, there are sort of five basic headings of new music, and there were five basic headings of new music from 2009. But that, you know, in terms of the versions and variations that get created from that, it's probably 60 or so
60
versions.
60 different versions.
Yeah, because you imagine that. Again, there's, you know, in terms of lengths, in terms of different instrumentation, how those moments might be crafted. I mean, you sit in the control room at a live broadcast, it's just stunning.
Have you done that?
What they have to do. I have. Not for the Super Bowl, but for other shows. It's really stunning what they do on the fly to really essentially craft and almost score that show with the music that I've created. It's really an incredible art.
So for Sunday, they will have not only the stuff you've just done, but they will also have your 2009 updates as well. So they'll have a full range of emotional colors to play with.
Absolutely.
One of them is this 30-second bumper, again, from the 2009 update that Joel Beckerman did. Again, a chance you might hear this during the Super Bowl on Sunday as well. All right, that is some of Joel Beckerman's music for the 2009 Super Bowl. It will be part of the producer's arsenal for this Sunday's Super Bowl as well, in addition to the new music that Joel has recorded. How did the Philharmonic players feel about having a kind of dubstep track beneath them as they played?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, also just to give credit to my collaborator Rich Jacobs on the previous track, but the Philharmonic players are fearless. They are just unbelievable. And you think about the diversity of music that they play, everything from 20th century to 17th century to experimental music and choral music, and they're really just consummate musicians, but also very fearless. Mm-hmm. And they really were up for the challenge. And you know, I have to tell you, again, the music was very challenging to play, and especially for the brass players.
Right, because lots of exposed brass playing and stuff.
And very high, yeah. and you know, louder. It's not subtle. It is the Super Bowl.
Now, I hate to even ask this question, to even pose the possibility of the Patriots winning the Super Bowl, but do you have a dirge version, sad, lamenting version?
I'll get to work on that right away. No, but you know what? I perish the thought.
Now, as a composer, we don't normally think of science, neuroscience, psychology as being an essential part. But with what you are doing, do you constantly find yourself thinking, what will the effect of this be on the audience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That really is the essence of the sonic branding work. I don't know about laboratories and hooking up people with wires, but I think it's the strategy, it's the understanding the psychology, how people respond to sound and music. You know, I think one of the things that's so fascinating is, you know, we're, as human beings, we're really wired for sound. There are parts of the brain that respond to sonic at this very subconscious level. And I think there's really no way to manipulate people with this at all. What you can do, though, is either turn them on or turn them off. And one of the things we always talk about is scoring the brand experience when you're talking about scoring the story, just like you score a movie. And that's really exactly the approach that we take. So also, in addition to sound, we look at where there's silence. Mm. So really, we're scoring just in a movie. If you had movie music from front to back, it would be exhausting, and it wouldn't necessarily help the story. So we're very cognizant of the audience and really trying to bring people in and trying to be honest, really trying to you can't tell stories that are false either. You have to tell true stories.
Well, I have to say, you know, there have been some exhausting Super Bowls, but sometimes it's a good exhaustion, as it was 4 years ago when the Giants last met the Patriots. They take on the two teams take on each other again in a, as Joel put it, a grudge match this Sunday. And Joel Beckerman's update of the John Williams theme will be all over the NBC broadcast. And Joel, I'm looking forward to hearing what you've done with the music this Sunday. And thanks very much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
And in addition to Joel Beckerman's new theme music, there will also, of course, be the halftime entertainment provided this year by Madonna. And this song, Vogue, is rumored to be part of her set. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. On our next program, cognitive psychologist Gary Marcus tells us how anyone, even a 40-year-old cognitive psychologist with no apparent musical talent, can learn to make music. Plus, guitarist Vernon Reed of Living Color and the Black Rock Coalition returns to the show with an update on his piece, Artificial Africa. And don't forget about Soundcheck's latest crowdsourcing experiment, Super Collectors. We want to hear from people with huge collections of music-related stuff, concert t-shirts, memorabilia, magazines, instruments, etc. If you or someone you know is a super collector, go to our webpage and fill out the nomination form. That's at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Gina Goldasis and Rachel Smith. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck. Vogue, Vogue, Vogue.